You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Well, the biggest subject that I am hearing today and each and every day is the crisis at our border. We're talking about immigration, and when Joe Biden became president, on his first day, he canceled the rules, regulations, and laws that President Trump had put in place and pretty much opened the border. And boy, do we have a flood of people coming across our border right now. A lot of the people that are coming across are minors who are unchaperoned. They have nobody with them. They're ages 6 to 17. Of course, people coming over are all ages, but I'm particularly talking about the children and how these people are getting across the border and what is happening to them and what will happen to them and what is happening to our country. There's so much to talk about with this, Becky. We just have a crisis of unprecedented, issue at our border right now.
It is absolutely heartbreaking. When I've scanned the news and it seems to be on every channel and every format, I see images of children in facilities who some of them look just like the average teenager with the shoes, the tennis shoes, the hoodies and all. But you know, the story runs so deep with this. They're not ordinary. Nothing about this is good, or it's tragic what's happening. And I'm trying to grasp the full or a bigger understanding going back to literally from whence it comes, which is what's happening back in Mexico and at home, and the mentality with the parents. On paper, I can see it, but these are acts of sheer desperation to send your child across the border, which alone, I just can't even fathom the terror that some of these small children, I've heard as young as six years old, traveling with a sibling, perhaps, sent right off to travel, however, by what means they're arriving and being placed. Sometimes the siblings are being separated. But the mentality of, let's send our children there, they have to take our children, and then eventually we'll come, because they'll get into the system and they'll be able to get their vaccinations and they'll be provided for. And it's a snowball that has turned into a mountain,
an avalanche.
So
when we talk about these children, many times, of course, they're not walking from one country to the other by themselves. They are generally in groups. But what's happening is a lot of these people are not just coming from Mexico. In fact, many, many are coming from below Mexico, from Nicaragua, from Honduras, from El Salvador, from those different countries. And they come through Mexico, which, by the way, Mexico is not happy about. They actually preferred it the way that President Trump had it, where even though they weren't huge fans of people staying on their side of the border and not being able to come across until their court dates, what that did is it stopped the flood from below Mexico into Mexico. So now Mexico is also bearing the burden of all of these people coming up from south of them and having to have them sleep in odd places and go to the restrooms in odd places and, try to find food. And many of these people actually will end up staying in Mexico and finding work there, which the Mexican people are not happy about because it takes jobs from them. So then as we continue the conversation, Becky, about what happens, they get to our border and now they are, Yeah, they're just being allowed in. And even though President Biden just said that the border is closed, it's absolutely not closed. That's not true at all. It is not closed. They come across. So they, and you know, I live in Texas. I live in, you know, just the eye of the storm where these people are coming across. We had over 100,000 come across last month, and probably equally as many that were not stopped or caught, you know, so they're just roaming in our country. Over 10% of these people have, the ones that have been tested and are in these centers, which are full of people. So over 10% come in infected with COVID. So they are rapidly passing it around, but they are not being held in any kind of quarantine as you and I and all of us in our country have had to do for the last year. They are simply released into the population. So then we deal with the children, and the children are coming up through Texas. And Texas is it is the biggest child sex trafficking centers of the United States. So in order for any of these people to get over the border, they have to pay a cartel member. That includes the families of these children. So the price for families could be $5,000 to $8,000. The price for a child is a little bit less. The price if you're from a country south of Mexico is one thing. The price if you're from Mexico is another thing. Oh, there's all kinds of different things, but the cartels are raking in over $14 million a day with these people. Now they are handling these children. And what do you think that means for their safety?
Oh, it's absolutely terrifying to hear those statistics. You know, I was scanning through some news again and reading from NPR that former acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf is quoted as saying the Biden administration is largely blaming the challenges on the border with the previous administration. And yet Secretary Wolf is saying, we told Biden's camp, we have informed them, we have given them everything they need to understand that the systems in place right now are working. And if you dismantle them, this is going to happen. So it's not like this administration was unaware of what was in place that was actually working. And the media would say otherwise, or show you pictures that would say otherwise. But knowing that the current administration is actually dismantling what was working takes it to such a different level of it's not only broken, but it's broken in such a way that it's not easily fixed. Two things. You have people in high places that have made decisions that are causing this problem. And then you have, literally, as you said, the flood, the amount of people and children that are now inside our borders. It's overwhelming. The sheer number is just too much. And of course, he wants to, you know, the dam has broken. And it's like, wait, we need to do something. We got to stop this because this is too much. It's sort of like when when kids have a party and they're not supposed to, and they think they can get away with it, and all of a sudden it's gotten out of hand. And this has really, really gotten out of hand. I'm curious about so many things. You mentioned the health. How is the health being handled for the people who are in the holding facilities who have COVID? Is testing even being done? Or as you mentioned, they're just letting people go, which makes no sense whatsoever when we're shutting down businesses and people are losing their all of their finances and their business, their livelihoods, because they are being obedient and quarantining, staying home, doing what they're supposed to do. And then people come across the border in droves. And it's so overwhelming that at some point they just have to say, you know what, just go on in. Just go in, because we don't have the wherewithal to really actually take care of this like we should.
Exactly what's happening. They are just saying, go on in. So they're releasing them within 72 hours, and they bust them all over the country.
So what happened, Linda, to literally, my brain goes back to Ellis Island. And when people would enter the country, there was a process. And at what point have we decided, we don't need the process anymore? There's just so many people. We don't have time for that. Let's bring them in. There has to be many levels to this. Are we allowing this to happen because somehow it's good for the economy? Because there are lots of spoiled Americans who aren't willing to do the jobs that some of the new people are willing to do?
Well, can I address that real quick?
Yeah,
because
sure.
One would think that might be a reason. And by the way, there are laws in place, and this flies in the face of all the laws for immigration that are already in place that were decided by our Congress and Senate years ago, and they've not readdressed it. So this was done by executive order. But as far as it's not done for the economy, because people don't want to do jobs, because here's the catch 22 if you're an illegal immigrant. First of all, you will come into the country and you really have nothing. So they're actually giving a lot of these people money, and some people are getting hotel rooms, but a lot of people are just being bused here and there and literally dropped off. Just get out of the bus. Thanks. Have a nice day. So what do they do? Well, they go try to get a job, as you said. And what happens under the Biden administration is it's such a kind of a head scratcher. They are also coming down on employers for hiring these people. So you bring them all in, but then if you're the employer who hires them, then you get in trouble, you get fined, you get arrested, you know, you lose your business, whatever it is. So how does that even make any sense? What the purpose is that the Democrats feel that if they get enough of these people in, it's going to add to their voting block, and that conservatives will never win the White House again. That is the entire motivation here. There is no other motivation. And you don't see our Senate or our Congress doing anything to fix immigration. So they want to let this floodgate open. They don't care about these people, despite what Jen Psaki says, the press secretary there for Biden, who says, we can't turn away these children who, you know, are being hurt or oppressed or whatever it is in their countries. We have no idea if they are or not. We have no idea, but we know for sure that a lot of these children are being raped on the way up here. There is a, with the cartel, if you are a female of a certain age, and I don't know what that age is, you have to have sex with one of these people before you can come over the border. Not only do you have to pay them, but that's like part of the price. So this is not a fun journey for these people. And why people are coming anyway is because they want better opportunity, and because the door was opened and they will get money, and they'll probably they already have a bill in the that went through the Congress to have these people be given amnesty. Anybody that came into the country under the age of 19, well, by when? I mean, they could be 40 now and have come in before they were 19, or they could have come in yesterday and they're under 19. So, I mean, that just makes all these people citizens and able to get, you know, welfare and financial help. So this is such a can of worms. But my concern, and this is what you were talking about too, is the children that come over. And having worked in law enforcement myself, having seen firsthand children who have been sexually molested, I am very, very passionate about the sex trafficking that goes on up the 35 corridor through Texas into Oklahoma and to many other states throughout the country. And these kids have no way to extricate themselves from the situation.
Heartbreaking is not strong enough a term. I cannot imagine what a parent must be thinking to intentionally send their children knowing this. I can't even begin to imagine either how desperate they are or how horrible that life would be better for their for them to send their children through the experience with the cartel and spend that kind of money, which I don't even know what they would have to do to get that kind of money. If we're talking thousands of dollars, it's a stripping of life. It leaves them scarred for life. Is this a better life? I would think that something just must be so hellish and nightmarish that you would think it's better to put your children through this situation. Does that make any sense? It's like, you know what, you need a root canal, you go through the pain, but it'll be better on the other side.
Right. And a lot of these kids do have relatives in the United States. So the parents give them, I don't know if they give them a note or how, I'm sure that that would be the case, or make sure that the child knows, you know, what to say to Border Patrol when they get here so that they know that there is a relative there for them. I don't know the system after that because we've not been allowed to know it. I mean, the public has not been allowed to know it. And the press has not been allowed to go down and do any investigation or take pictures. So we really are quite in the dark from the administration that promised to be very, very transparent. That's just not happening with this. The other situation to me that's very worrisome is in the people that they have stopped at the border. They have numerous felons that they have stopped. People that are murderers, people that are sexual predators, people that have been arrested for every kind of crime. And we have had a number of Middle Eastern terrorists, people on the watch list that have tried to come over. So all of those are very, very concerning. And the other thing that's very concerning to me is, you know, we have a huge drug problem in our country. And most of those drugs come from up over that southern border. And last year alone, we had over 110,000 of our citizens, our children, our parents, our brothers, our sisters die from fentanyl overdose. And the amount of fentanyl that came over the border last year was enough to kill over 60,000 Americans and did kill over 60,000 Americans. And all of these things are coming through as we speak as well. So it's unattended children, it's drugs, it's criminals. We don't know who's coming over our border, and we don't know if they're gang members, if they're murderers, if they're wanted somewhere, if they're sick or if they have communicable diseases. We don't know any of that. And living, like I said, in the eye of the storm is such an uncomfortable feeling that we don't even know what we're dealing with. I was just at the border just as this started, because I actually took vacation down on the southern end of Texas and went along the beaches. So I started in places that now are completely full of migrants coming across the border. And these little towns, Becky, they can't they can't withstand this many people. They're very, very poor towns on the border. They're small towns. They don't have a budget to feed and house and shelter these people. So it's really a problem in so many ways, for not just for us, but also for the immigrants coming across. It's got to be terribly uncomfortable.
Well, consequences are what's happening, sadly. The fact that this new administration is changing what was put into place. And I am not fully aware of everything that was in place previously, but I know the changes that are currently being placed in place have allowed for this huge uptick in the number of people that are here, which brings with it so many other complications. I very simple-mindedly start thinking of how to fix it. And I obviously don't have answers for that. But it's simple to think that some simple things might assist with fixing it. And I don't know how it can ever actually be fixed. It's so overwhelming and it's gotten so out of hand and out of control. I am hoping and praying, because the situation is dire, and it for not only mainly for the children that are there and our country, but those human beings, and they are human beings, and this is a terrible situation and something does need to be done. All I can do is say I'm going to read some more and continue to, you know, see if there's any way I can do anything, write someone about something.
Well, you know, I think that the thing to do, and again, I'm no expert at this, but just using common sense, the way that President Trump had it by building the wall, and by the way, I have to tell you 100% for certain that Mexico was in agreement with building that wall. They had no problem with the wall being built, and they thought it was a good idea. It actually stopped immigration into their country from their southern border. If they can't get up through Mexico and get into the United States, Mexico is not affected by all of these immigrants coming through their country. So it was a win-win, which is why it was working. And we needed to finish the wall. And the answer is not to not allow anybody into our country. That was never an issue. President Trump was all for immigration, and I'm all for immigration, but legal immigration,
right,
where we know who's coming into our country, where they're vetted, that they're not a murderer, that they're not carrying drugs in, those kinds of things. And that's what we're asking. We're not saying turn everybody away, but when you open the floodgates like this, I feel so bad. And I feel that this administration is so responsible for those people in our country who will be affected by things like letting criminals in. So, you know, if there is a sexual predator, and there are so many sexual predators coming over, and I know that most people in the country do not look at the crime stats. And because I'm married to a forensic criminologist, we do look at the crime stats, and we do see the amount of sex crimes that are committed by illegal immigrants. And that certainly doesn't say that they're all bad people. They are mostly not bad people. But if it's your child that is affected by that immigrant,
then
it doesn't matter anything about everybody else, right? It's your child. So I just think that we are doing such a disservice in the seeking of thinking that we're going to get votes and we're going to, you know, knock the conservatives out forever, and these people are going to give us an insurance policy. I'm not so sure that that's true, because I have to tell you, a lot of the border towns, which are primarily Hispanic in Texas, voted for President Trump. Why? Because they agreed with people coming in legally, not illegally. So they might get a big surprise by doing what they're doing. But in the meantime, the money we're spending as taxpayers, the human cost with sex trafficking, and just with these children, I'm with you, Becky. I can't imagine having my child come up across the border by themselves and not know what in the world they're, are they eating? Are they sick? Are they exposed to predators? I mean, I can't even imagine.
No, there will be consequences for what's happening. Tragic.
Yep. So we've got to continue to, I guess, you know, do what we do, write our congressmen, write our senators, talk about it, let people know what's happening, because honestly, a lot of people, they want to just close their eyes to it. It's painful. It really causes people a lot of, I don't know what the word is, stress over the situation. So they just don't want to think about it. They don't want to watch the news. They don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
So we need
need to get involved, even if it's just emotionally, that could lead to action.
Yeah. And I think that the women of this country, just like the women on this show, are the ones who are going to be the loudest speakers. It's not a matter of being unkind to close the border. It's a matter of being responsible to America and to the people in those other countries, because we're putting them through a lot as well. By opening the borders, we are subjecting them to things that they never expected as well. By the way, you know, one of the things that has just come out is these cartels who are controlling everything. You don't get across the border without paying some money to the cartels. These cartels, if you can't pay the money, you give an IOU. So when you get in the U.S. and you have to really work and you have to give them their money, they actually are putting tracking bracelets on people coming up over the border so that they know where they are, so that they can get their money. And believe me, they will get their money, because what comes along with that is threats to the people's families, relatives, people that they care about, and themselves. So these people are not necessarily free when they get across the border and they hit the United States. These people are still obligated to those cartels for whatever money that they owe them. And that's not going to go away. So that's just tragedy on top of tragedy.
It sounds like the cartel network is south of the border, but that then means if they're tracking these people, they have they have an infrastructure of people that are essentially their thugs that are living here in the United States. And that places a sometimes probably lifelong burden, and perhaps short life in that case, on these people who have been struggling to get here, struggling in their lives, and now they're going to continue to struggle and always be indebted to someone like the cartel, which is, that's just evil and sick. And that's another sanction we don't want any part of in the United States.
Yep. So there are so many little fingers to this, you know, like the octopus, it's got lots of legs. We really need to be thinking about what we're doing here. I truly hope that they will close the border. I honestly don't think that that's going to happen. I think that they're going to let as many people across as they possibly can. And, you know, we just have to stay not just hopeful, but, you know, we have to become active. So it matters who we vote for. It matters that we get people in there that will help stop this. And I know that the governor in Texas is doing everything he can on the border to mitigate the damage being done to Texas and to the people coming through their border. You know, let me take a minute real quick, Becky, to introduce myself. I'm Linda Martinelli, and I am a business owner and mom, wife, and also the host of Talking While Married right here on America Out Loud every weeknight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And I am Becky Cole Minen, and I'm also a wife and a mom of an amazing 20-year-old junior at a university. I live in thawing Michigan, and I'm a voice talent. So my voice can be heard, I believe, at the opening, Linda, open and close for Ladies of Liberty.
And we love it. You sound great always.
Thank you. That's what I do. I get to talk for a living.
And we'll be talking more in just a second.
Listen to the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
And we're back. We have more to talk about today, and we're going to start with something that has been on my mind for a while as I've been reading about this the past year. And it's a big subject that I just am thinking about, best way to put it, and it's reparations. And in the Chicago Tribune just yesterday, it states Evanston approves housing grants as part of city's local reparations program, believed to be the first of its kind in the nation. So what is happening, or what is about to happen, is that this city in near Chicago, it's a suburb, is planning on using funds from the sale of marijuana to give finance, to give money to the Black residents that will begin to repay the damage that has been done over the last couple of centuries here in the United States, and start to create a better life for the Black communities, because this is something that, according to the article, has been needed for a long time and would start to make a difference, because the white people have taken away for centuries with no second thought to trying to make life better. And this is a way that this is apparently going to start that process. And I do have a lot of thought about this, about the way that they're doing this, about why this is happening. And I am doing my best to try and understand. I want to be understanding in all things first, and check it up against certain things, and starting with the basics of right and wrong and good and bad. And I would love to have the discussion to to help figure this out, because I'm not 100% sure in my head about this. Does that make sense, Linda?
Yeah, and I'm not either. I have to say, I'm not a person that's for reparations, and it's a very simple reason and a very common sense reason in my mind. And that reason, Becky, is I wasn't here. My family wasn't here. My family emigrated from Europe, and they emigrated long after slavery even took place. So my family, my ancestors, had no part in slavery in the United States. And many of these people didn't either, although I did read in the Chicago one, and I don't know how they're going to vet the people that they were going to have them be descendants of slaves. Whether or not somebody was a descendant of a slave, they still have had the opportunity in this country to be anything that they want to be. And my thought is that if people are not, they're responsible for that. I'm not responsible for that. And I know that sounds very cold-hearted, and I don't mean it to. It's just a common sense thing to me, because I'm one of those people that's very accountable for my own success or failure. I own it either way. And when I see people that are people of color coming from terrible backgrounds, coming from, you know, the poorest of the poor, and becoming people that are doctors and politicians and lawyers and, you know, people that do very well for them, inventors, you know, people that do very well for themselves. I think all things are possible for all people. So this particular situation in Illinois, they've been trying to get through for many, many years. And now the political climate is such that, you know, they're going to get it through. And I think it was $10 million of money to start with. Is that
$400,000.
Okay. Well, the first initiative, it says, is a $10 million plan, but I guess $400,000 is the start, and they're going to give up to $25,000 for housing per eligible resident, with funding expected to come, like you said, from the marijuana sales, right?
Yes, it does. This does clarify how an applicant can receive the money, how you qualify. Mm-hmm. And it does state that, quote, origins in any of the Black racial and ethnic groups of Africa. So an applicant must have origins in any of the Black racial and ethnic groups of Africa. Applicants must also be a Black resident of Evanston between 1919 and 1969, or that person's direct descendant. And it further states, applicants also qualify if they experienced housing discrimination due to the city's policies or practices after 1969. So I think that's a way to really widen that scope, to broaden that scope, to be more inclusive. I think right from the get-go, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult to become an applicant. It sounds like it would be very, very difficult to even track your descendants to slaves in 2021. I know with new technology, a lot can be done, but then that has to be qualified. And then, well, I'm reading further down here. Actually, what it's saying, it seems like things are happening simultaneously with this. One being the reparations for discrimination for Black people living, at least we'll say in this area here, because that's what this is focusing on, is the Evanston area in near Chicago.
Right.
But also acknowledging the harm caused to Black African-Americans in Evanston, those residents, just due to the discriminatory housing policies and practices that were enacted on part of the city. which I know has happened all over the country. So I think they're tying two things in together. And they seem quite separate to me, but that's just me. I know one thing, the reparation for just to give people money just for the fact that they were slaves. We owe it to them. I have a hard time with that.
But they weren't slaves. I mean, they're descendants.
They're descendants. So,
and yep. You know, I mean, here's the thing. Nobody knows what their life would have been like as a descendant of that particular person, their great grandparent or whatever it was, had they not come to America. You know, I mean, so I just think that this is. This makes no sense to me. The two reparations that I'm seeing in here is to try to give them $25,000 towards being able to be a homeowner. Okay. If they do that, and if it's not a cash payment and it goes to a mortgage, mm-hmm. I'm still against all of it. So that being said, if they're going to do this, I think it would be a unique and interesting study to see what happens to those people with those houses. Are they then going to be more responsible and be able to make the payments, or are they going to, you know, take out a second and get cash? I mean, if this works as it's intended to give people a hand up, then I will be so interested to see that. And the second part of this is that they do want to do a transfer of wealth to the descendants of American slavery by giving them individual cash payments and following up with resources into public schools and neighborhoods that have been deprived of those investments, you know, because they're in poor neighborhoods. If you want to give that money to schools and places that can help children, I'm all for it.
I agree. But
to give people cash money to be able to buy a house, you know, I my jury is out. I don't like the thought of reparations. I just think it's wrong. But I am really going to be interested in the follow-up on this to see if you hand people cash, Becky, and they're not people mm-hmm. that already, you know how to handle cash. You know, some people will invest it, or some people will use it to do good things for their family. Other people will use it to go, you know, get some extra drinks at the liquor store. So, and that's all races. It doesn't matter who you are. When you hand people money, there's no working for it. There's no ownership of it. It's just free money. And I think that creates a problem. But if we help people get houses, I want to see how that goes. I mean, that would be a really interesting experiment. So I'm going to follow this and just see how this works.
I'm with you on that. I would agree. And I don't know, I'm curious to know if that's the plan, the follow through. Because it seems to me like if it's just, here's a check, and we're going to upgrade the school systems, and there we go, we're done. But I think that would be not worthless, but possibly even damaging. And you know, the old saying, give a person a fish, they'll eat for a day. Teach a person to fish and they can eat for a lifetime.
Exactly.
Teaching and showing and learning is different than just, I mean, and I'm even seeing it with people getting stimulus checks today regarding the COVID. When somebody gets a stimulus check, and I've known of younger youth, you know, single adults that are getting the stimulus check and taking vacations with it, they don't appear to really have a need. And that's just a few people that I know. I know there are so many out there that are literally using it just to pay bills so they can heat their home. But oftentimes that does happen in those situations where you're just given money and it's not spent wisely, and they wind up either in a worse situation because they've overextended themselves with that cash, or it's not used appropriately. And I would agree that there's a definite inequity with regard to some of the public schools, and that things definitely need to be improved for basic learning, just so for a safe building. And so that should have been done anyway, regardless of race. Those buildings that have become decrepit need to be fixed. And it should not matter what race is in that neighborhood. They need to be fixed. So if this helps with that in the particular areas that have seen the worst decline, I think that's great. And I think they should do that anyway, no matter what, but not as a case of reparation, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you, because we don't have to call it reparation, but if you can get this money from marijuana sales, which is another thing I'm not a huge fan of, but if you're going to do it and you can get this extra tax money in and you can set it aside to go to the underprivileged neighborhood schools to make programs better, to make after school care better, to give kids a hand up instead of a handout, I'm all for that. And I think that we ought to be looking at doing that anywhere and everywhere in the country, having nothing to do with reparations, having to do with simply with doing the right thing for our American brothers and sisters.
And you know, it could flow right into, because this has been in my head when I thought about talking about this today. My husband just finished a book about the Indian nations in America, in early America. And so we're doing reparations for the African Americans. There are also other races that the white people have literally wiped out. And so is this the start of something with many different races? I think this could be bigger. This could be bigger than what it appears.
Yeah, I mean, it always seems to go that way with these programs, doesn't it? Just, you know, they kind of start somewhere and then they explode. I know that President Biden has been talking about reparations as a whole for people of color across the country. So I don't know where that's going to go. Things are going through our Congress and through executive order so fast, I have a hard time keeping up with it right now. But you know, this will be a really interesting kind of social experiment to keep an eye on and see how it works and see if it really helps people or if it doesn't help people, you know?
Yeah, I do hope they follow up with this. Again, after reading this article, I'm not seeing any indication that it's something they plan to track, actually, which I think would be doing it quite a disservice, because this is historical. And it's something that, if it's going to work, really, I believe, needs to be held accountable for, held accountable in the fact that this is a program the United States is doing. And if it's actually going to work, those funds need to be accountable for such a program.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's one other thing that I want to chat with you about today, Becky, which is, you know, I was reading that Amazon has come out with a new biometric device that reads your palm. And so now you can actually go into a store and pay for your goods with just having used your palm print. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about that, and it is freaky in my head when I think about this. I don't like it personally. It just takes me back to when I was raised hearing about the mark of the beast. And I know lots of people are going to go, oh, that's just crazy. And that's crazy talk. But you know what? It seems one step closer to something that's out of our control and giving over complete control. To think that you could have something recognizable about your, either your skin or the palm of your hand, that that information can be linked to your money, to your health records, to everything and anything private about you as an individual that the government has. And it sounds a little George Orwellian, but it seems like we're here. And I'm not really comfortable with this. I would not want to participate with that. I don't feel the need to have that kind of convenience to where I, you know what? I don't want to take my card out of my wallet and put it in that machine. That's too much. Let's just run my hand over this. I think the younger people are going to think it's pretty cool. And they might think it's cool when we get microchipped and put something in our wrist to just wave and go, you know what? That takes care of all my charges, all my health records, all my anything. You pass out on the street and an ambulance worker can just scan your wrist and get all the information they ever wanted. I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I don't think I have enough trust in Amazon as a company at all to have them have that kind of power over me. I do not have an Alexa or any of those gadgets in my house because I'm not going to have them be spying on me. I do use locks for my video my cameras on my computers. I do use the little slides that, you know, you can block off. I just don't want anybody to have that much control over my information and my life, because what they do with it and what they will continue to do with it, and they've already said that they would do, is so you slide your hand over this palm, and they've got, I think, 8 stores in Seattle now that are called Amazon Go. And you go in and you slide your palm to get entry to the store, and you, you don't slide your palm, you just hover it over this gadget. And then you go in and you pick up whatever you want and you walk out. I haven't figured out exactly how you pay for it, but I know that it then gets paid for on whatever method of payment that you have done, which I assume would go through your Amazon account. So then they know what you're buying, right? They know everything you're buying at the grocery store. Yep. So now they can target you with ads from all the manufacturers. That is the idea. And that is how Amazon makes the billions of dollars it makes, is by these manufacturers paying them the money to get your information about what you're buying.
Yep. It's very sci-fi, but sadly very real.
Well, it is. And Amazon is also the company that started the, did the facial recognition that a lot of the police departments bought. And now they are pulling that back because they're saying that, I mean, like everything else in life, it has a racial undercurrent to it, which is that it says that there's more chance that the facial recognition software, if you're a police officer, will recognize somebody of color differently than somebody not of color. So that there would be more errors if they were of color. I don't know that they have proven that at all, or that they have statistics on that, but they use an argument that is so offensive to me in saying that because the police have so much abuse going on to people of color, that that's why they have to pull it. Well, we're not going to talk about it today, but I could bore you for the next 30 minutes with statistics about how that is absolutely a false narrative, that the people of color murder rates by police are not what you hear at all. And actually things are completely different than what you hear in the media. So they took a very important tool away that they created that makes us all safer. And I don't know how this palm print is going to make us all safer, but I know that I don't want somebody having a record of every single thing that I do and every move that I make in going to, you know, if you want to go out shopping at the mall and you go down the road in the future, a couple of years, store to store and use your palm print everywhere. I mean, somebody knows every single move you make.
Yeah. The Big Brother is watching, and this only adds to it, and it's convenience. And like I I hate to sound like an old person, but truly the younger generation is going to love this because they're going to look at this as convenience. I don't have to carry my wallet with me. I mean, most of them don't carry a wallet or purse anyway. I mean, I carry what looks like a small suitcase wherever I go. I'm prepared. I'm like the MacGyver on the street. I've got everything in my purse, but Amazon is stating that they know this is going to be scrutinized and that they know that this is going to test the limits of customer trust in the company. And I think that people should think twice about this and look at the top, look at who's sitting at the top at Amazon, consider that source, and then consider, you know, possible other motives for this and where it can lead. And people need to be aware and consciously aware of what's happening with things like this that are touted as just a matter of convenience.
And the person sitting at the top of Amazon is the same person who took social media, completely destroyed it for conservatives. They're the same person that have taken many, many books by conservative authors off of Amazon. So you really have to look at, you know, these people that we're working with. Amazon is so convenient to use, and I love to use them, but I really have a catch-22 in my mind about it because I don't like what they're doing when they choose to use their power to hurt us. So, I don't want to give them any more power than they already have, because that information about us can go to anybody, can go worldwide.
So, and isn't it subtle? It's so subtle, Linda. It's amazing because it's all touted as such a good thing. It's the wave of the future, literally the wave with your palm, with your hand, of the future.
Until, you know, it's great until it's not.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.